This podcast is intended for an adult audience, but we're not the podcast police, so figure out your own shit, Skyler.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello! And welcome to Science Faction 269. Science Faction, I call BS.
I can't wait to play this game against a new scientist.
Yes, Dr. Nick, I know you probably don't know the way this game works. I read four science news articles. My panelists compete to see which ones are real and which ones are BS, standing for bad science. All of them are independent variables, so they could all be true, all false, any number of true, any number of false. And you have exactly as much chance of winning as Damien, and yet he never seems to win.
Okay, so you've heard... You've heard a few episodes before, you know the game's played.
Yeah.
So you know the list of unspoken rules that he has omitted from that?
Oh, absolutely. Just now?
Unspoken, okay. you're right, unspoken rules. No white after Labor Day. you go outside to in when doing cutlery and formal dinner.
Wait 30 minutes after eating to swim.
Right. Yeah, all that stuff.
By the way, Nick, if I start blinking or tapping you, I'm just asking you to loosen the shot collar on my leg.
All right, gotcha.
Tell Bobby.
All right, let's get started with I Call BS.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
All right, article number one. A deadly form of prion disease contracted from eating the brains of a squirrel has been determined to be the cause of a Rochester, New York man's death. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. If we had discovered a new prion disease, we'd be talking about it here on the show. And two, the squirrel brain-eating community would have had a field day with this.
just the hillbilly community. It overlaps very strongly with the community of people who wear overalls with only one of the straps buckled.
By the way, do you think, when I hear a picture of hillbilly eating squirrel brain,
right.
I'm picturing a hillbilly trying to impress his family with how cultured he is.
Yeah, oh,
I'm recreating the Indiana Jones scene with the monkey brains and everything.
Oh, no, it's just he just throws it on the dinner table, and he goes, who wants the good brains?
And I'll throw away the rest of the squirrel as a power symbol.
All right, and Dr. Nick.
I think I'm going to go with science because I want it to be true. Because, prions scare me.
Yes, me too.
Those things are terrifying, and so... I want it to be a real thing still. You know, I don't want to be scared of nothing, right?
That is a good logical reasoning there. It's some kind of version of the sunk cost fallacy and something. I don't know quite how to describe what's wrong with your statement, but... All right, article number two. The invasive Burmese python population in Florida has undergone a rapid biological evolution over the last decade. We're defining biological evolution in the biological sense, i.e. the change in gene frequency over time.
Pythons is evolving. How come they're still dinosaurs?
So, Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, and it's no wonder that only after 10 years of living in Florida, it's not uncommon to see a python drinking a Mountain Dew or wearing a Make America Great Again hat or spitting at a Mexican or something.
I'm still amazed at how well they can drive those fan boats. I mean, they gotta have one slither coil around the stick and another one pressing on that pedal thing.
They always stand their ground, too.
Yeah. There's some interesting python racial tensions that are in Florida right now, but you know what? Our country is getting older, and hopefully we'll get better. All right, and Dr. Nick.
Man, I'm really, really torn on this one because, on the one hand, it doesn't seem like they should be evolving that fast. But then again, it is Florida. There's some interesting pressures, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And then how you phrase it with the gene expression, it just seems like that pushes me towards saying it's science.
All right. On to article number three. A new study finds that banning corporal punishment in schools, even if you don't ban it in homes, is enough to drastically reduce the instances of violence among young men. Damien, is this science or bad science?
Well, I know in Japan they have corporal punishment.
True.
And they have very well-behaved student body, but you could argue maybe corporal punishment creates a love of tentacle porn or something.
True.
But I assume this is in a Western culture, so I am going to say... This is science. However, banning corporal punishment in Western cultures de-incentivizes people to get into teaching who got into teaching because they wanted to beat children.
That's true. We did have a whole generation of teachers who would tell us, we came here to beat you.
Every Catholic nun, I have to believe, that's in the 60s. That's what they got.
It's the only group that would wrap electrical tape around the handle of a ruler to be like the warriors of nuns, you know? All right, and Dr. Nick.
I'm gonna have to go with bad science, because at best this seems like correlation with too many variables. It feels difficult that you'd be able to pull that result out of there.
Very interesting. And on to article number 4. A new study shows that 25% of all known Neanderthal remains from Poland have gone through the stomach of a raptor. Damien, is this science or bad science?
I don't know if this is science or bad science, but I'm going to say science, because I have to pick a side. Whatever the task, it took upwards of 30 Polish Neanderthals to get it done.
So
whether
it was
getting eaten by a raptor, screwing in a light bulb.
Like eight or nine individual Neanderthal fossils through the stomach of a raptor. All right.
If you're Polish, you should just be offended by what I'm doing.
Yeah. So. All right. And Dr. Nick.
All right. So looking at this, the first thing I think of is there's certain societies or religions ritually have their dead carried off by vultures. So I'm thinking,
that is true.
Man, maybe vultures. But then from what I know about Neanderthals, they didn't have that kind of evolved religion that we know of, or society, so that seems a little skeptical. 25% seems like a really solid number for figuring out years later if somebody went through a digestive system. So I'm gonna go with bad science on this.
All right.
I know there was Neanderthals, but I really wanted to make like a Polish Jurassic Park joke.
Mm-hmm.
you'll think of it later.
Yeah,
sitting on the toilet, like, ah, damn it.
Yeah, you're actually in this. It's like a petting zoo.
Sausage! We got sausage here! Let's go back and see how you guys did follow along at home and see how you did. Article number 1. A deadly form of prion disease contracted from eating the brains of a squirrel has been determined to be the cause of a Rochester, New York man's death. Damien thinks this is false. Dr. Nick thinks this is true. And this one is science, and Dr. Nick is right. It is terrifying!
Yeah!
Remember, we have talked about prions before. Actually, Nick, the reason we've talked about them is because they're one of my greatest fears.
They're terrifying.
They're horrible. This is not a bacteria. It is not a virus. It is a protein, just like any other protein in your body. Your body is made of proteins, right? And what happens is proteins' function is determined to some extent by their shape. Think of them almost like Legos. You can use all the same different Legos, but if you put them in a different shape, it can do a different thing, take a different payload, whatever it is. That's the way these work. The different folding, or it's actually, I guess a better analogy would be origami. You can take the same piece of paper and fold it into a duck or a swan or a cow or something, right? So the way it folds determines the way it works. And what a prion is, essentially it's a misfolded protein. And that misfolded protein can't work the same way normal proteins do. And when it touches the proteins around it, it makes them misfold. So the healthy protein around it touches this bad one. All of a sudden, the healthy one misfolds. That works basically exponentially, because each protein is touching many other proteins. It expands exponentially, and then basically your entire brain, because it's going through your brain matter, becomes this spongiform stuff that can't work as a brain, and you die. It's 100% fatality rate. Nobody has ever survived a prion disease. The second you get one single misfolded protein in your brain, you are dead, inevitably. They have incubation periods that can be as little as a few months, and that exact same prion can, in the exact same community, can be in another person and not manifest itself for 50 years. And we don't know why. We don't know the rhyme or reason to them. We know that they're common in certain animal groups, like mad cow disease is a famous one, happens in bovines. There's scrapie, which happens in goats and sheep. And there are ones like this that are basically very similar prion diseases that happened in rodents. The main thing is you want to avoid the brains. That's where this stuff comes from. The human examples, things like kuru, which we talk about, happened to the New Guinea Highlanders. It was happening because they were ceremonially eating the dead, and when they ate the brains, they would contract it. Again, they couldn't link it to eating the brains, because sometimes it happened 40 years later, so they wouldn't know what linked it to it. Eventually, we found out it was this type of prion disease. It's hard to destroy them with heat. They have very, very high heat tolerances. You can bury them in the ground for 15, 20, 30 years, dig them up, and they can still infect you. In fact, as an archaeologist, you have to be careful when you are working along the Oregon Trail, because there are bovines that went down in the Oregon Trail in the 19th century with mad cow disease that are still infectious to this day.
Terrifying.
Terrifying!
There we go.
There's a ton of computer-generated children who've died of dysentery along the Oregon Trail.
Not only is this not a disease that we have a cure for, we have no ability to cure it. We have no idea how you could cure it. It might not ever even be possible to cure it, because once the protein is misfolded, you've just done damage. You've shot a bullet through that brain and damaged the brain tissue. It is gone. There's nothing you can do to it. So not only is it not curable, it might never be curable.
Does it look like jelly or something?
Yeah, it literally changes the form of it. You can't see it. You see it either in the autopsy or you can see it in brain scans. That's how we diagnose it.
So where where's the conspiracy here? Who buried this article?
It's terrifying, but it's rare, but it happens. And it's usually called Creutzfeldt-Jacobs disease in human beings. Most versions of this disease in humans actually just come from a mutation. Basically, one of your proteins randomly, either due to a mutation or to something else, just misfolds on its own and just goes. That's what we call sporadic Creutzfeldt-Jacobs disease.
Even more terrifying.
More terrifying. You don't even have to eat anything. You just get it. However, some some percentage, like this guy, he came down with it. And what I love is that, because he died, and the hospital administrators were like to his family, hey, do you know what might have been? Because they didn't find out he had this until they did the autopsy, cut open his brain. They go, do you know what it might have gotten this? Did he have a lot of beef in the 80s or 90s? And they're like, no. But you know, he just loved eating squirrel brains. Could that be it? Could it be the massive amounts of squirrel brains that he ate all the time? I want to be in the room for this conversation.
Like, it was such a notable thing. Yes. Like, personality. Like, he couldn't go anywhere without, like, seeing a squirrel grabbing it and, like, sucking on it. Like,
he was like the freaking cane for Mr. Peanut. Like, it was that much a part of his MO.
Was he, like, there in the room? Like, some people would bring cashews. He just brought a bag full of squirrels.
Right. Well, now I'm worried I'm missing out on something. You know, they tell you don't eat cookies because you might, you know, get, you know, what's it called?
Diabetes?
No. Cookies, raw cookie dough. Sorry.
Oh, because you might get salmonella.
Yeah, they say you shouldn't eat cookie dough because you might get salmonella. Now it turns out you can get prion disease anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe we're missing out on all the brain eating we could be having.
Could be. It could be. Something to think about, by the way. There was a big rash of mad cow disease that came from infected beef from the 80s and 90s before we were testing things correctly. And a bunch of people got sick and still continue to get sick with prion disease because of that. Something weird to think about. Those people, that group of people who got sick from the meat from the 80s and 90s, we are going to see people continuing to show signs who have never shown it before, who essentially contract that prion disease from eating beef decades from now.
Wait, eating beef or eating beef brain? Was that a popular thing?
There was, it was mixed in. It was like, ground up beef that had just, yeah, basically. And so, but no, think about that. Somebody ate a hot dog in 1988 that technically got a prion in their brain that for whatever reason hasn't basically spread, but will, and they won't realize they have the disease till decades from now.
Right, well,
how crazy is that?
That's terrifying.
That incubation period.
Well, okay, fine. We'll take out the cow brains. We'll just make up the excess with more hog anus.
Dr. Nick, I love you already because I am also terrified of prions. Later, we're going to have to talk about whether or not the Klingon Batleth is the best hand-to-hand combat weapon because I would like to say that it is. Article number 2, the invasive Burmese python population in Florida has undergone rapid evolution over the last decade. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science. Batting 1,000 already, Dr. Nick.
All right.
And the reason was really...
I am allowing you to
beginner's
be
luck, you know, beginner's luck.
I am submitting.
And the reason was actually an interesting thing. It was a cold snap that happened in 2010. Now, where they are in Burma, the python, it's a very tropical environment. They do not have these cold snaps. This type of extreme temperature does not happen.
Can you please define a cold snap
in
Florida?
No, it gets well.
It's a flavor of Mountain Dew. It's
it's when you mix the codeine in with your diabetes insulin. Ooh, give me that cold snap. No, it got below freezing, and substantially so for a decent amount of time. Now, this just doesn't happen where these pythons are normally from. Those of you guys who don't know, Florida has this insane invasive problem with these pythons. Actually, a couple of different things, including crocodiles, have escaped there, but these pythons are a big one. It actually became a big problem because in the 1980s and 90s, we started this big exotic reptile trade, and Florida was the center of it because they have a great climate, except for these cold snaps in general.
And an insane consumer base that would walk.
Totally. And it's Florida.
10-foot python, get in my house.
So what ended up happening is through a lot of hurricanes, especially Hurricane Andrew, a lot of these reptile shops were completely ripped open and their species were spread around the Florida Everglades. You mix that in with a bunch of rednecks who bought these things when they got too big, didn't know what to do with it, so they just let them go in the swamp. And these pythons established this invasive colony that just began spreading like crazy because they're badasses and they can eat everything there. Those things they're used to like alligators, which aren't actually the best predators, and these Burmese python are way better. They're jacking the alligators, they're jacking the deer, they're jacking all the stuff in the swamp. And
they're consuming the alligators?
Oh yeah. There's actually great videos.
So we should release some in Utah?
Yeah. Right. Get these pythons to Utah.
No cold snaps though.
Yeah, that'd be a problem. So we put bounties on their heads because they're killing all the prey and stuff. They're just demolishing the entire ecosystem out there. They've established this huge population. They're tearing through Florida. Well, these researchers were seeing this at the time, and they realized, because of weather predictions, that we were going to have an unusual cold snap that happened in 2010, and they knew it was coming, and they thought, let's do something. Let's test the DNA now, and then let's wait till after this cold snap happens, and let's test it again later. And they were able to do so, and they found a very significant genetic difference. Now, here's what you have to know. Again, we don't know the entire population of the pythons there because they're in the middle of the Everglades, but we can guess, and different areas have different populations. This cold snap killed between 40 to 90% of the python population in Florida. So this was an extreme event that killed most of the pythons in this place.
It killed the snake bounty hunter industry.
That's right. Yeah. It's ironically also run by Dog the Bounty Hunter.
I'm mayor of Tallahassee, Florida, and prominent snake bounty hunter.
These handcuffs are not working. So what they found was a massive change in that evolution in the frequency of certain genes. Now you might say, oh, it must have been for cold tolerance genes, right? That would make sense. Actually, you know what it is for? Is genes that allow the python to continually eat and grow and produce new organs and that kind of thing. And that doesn't make sense until you think about it.
New organs, like additional organs?
Basically, ears? No, to regenerate, to grow bigger, to grow faster, that kind of thing.
So they grow their arms back.
So in where the python's normally from, it doesn't have nearly as much food. It eats like once every few months and that's it, and grows at that rate. However, in Florida, it's such a badass compared to the prey that's there that they can eat nonstop. They can constantly eat the same amount of food that would last them 3 months. They can have every week or so in Florida. And so they are basically being geared genetically. It seems like natural selection is working so that they eat more, grow faster. Then those snakes would be more fecundant. They would have more kids because they would get to maturation age quicker and then have longer breeding cycle lives. And so basically, while we think you would logically, you'd go, oh, they're going to evolve to a more cold resistant snake. No, it killed so many of the snakes and such a huge percentage of them. Basically, the winners of the Darwin competition right now aren't the ones that can stand the cold the most, because there hasn't been another cold snap since 2010. It are the ones that can out-eat, out-breed, out-compete those ones around it.
Like a Joey Chestnut if you got laid all the time.
Yes, Damien, this is exactly like if Joey Chestnut, the hot dog eating champion, got laid so much that he had to start converting hot dogs into energy so that he could compensate for his massive sexual cardio output of energy, I guess?
King of New Jersey.
Yeah. All right, on to article number 3. A new study finds that banning corporal punishment in schools, even if you don't ban it in homes, is enough to drastically reduce the instances of violence among young men. Damien thinks this is true. Dr. Nick thinks this is false. And this one is bad science, though not why you thought so, Dr. Nick.
Oh, well,
it's still, yeah, win is win. It's kind of a surprising finding that's actually buried in a much bigger story. This was not the headline of this story. They had a different headline, blah, blah, blah. I found this particular fact very interesting. So what the study did is they looked at three different types of countries. Countries that have no bans on corporal punishment. You can beat them in schools, you can beat them at home, you can beat them wherever you want. Countries that ban corporal punishment completely. You're not allowed to beat a kid whether you're in your house or you're at school. And then countries which are like the midpoint, things like the US, the UK, those kind of countries where it's illegal to be beaten in a public school or in public, that you have certain restrictions to it, but corporal punishment is allowed in the home up to a certain level.
Prisons need populations. Yeah, why not?
I am glad this wasn't like a controlled study where they just hit some kids and decide
you,
whether they're going to beat them or not.
You hit your kid. You don't hit your kid. You sometimes hit your kid.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so what they found was that countries with complete bans did report drastically less male-on-male violence. 31% less fighting among boys than countries with no bans at all, and even more so among girls, 42% less in girls if you come from a country that has a complete ban on corporal punishment versus no ban whatsoever. However, in countries with partial bans, countries like the United States, the UK, there was still significantly less fighting in girls, so 56% less fighting, so there's a nice midpoint almost in between. However, for boys, there essentially was no difference. So in countries like the US and the UK, the violence among boys is basically the same level as countries where corporal punishment, you can beat the kids in schools and it doesn't matter, you can beat kids in public. There doesn't seem to be a difference. It almost seems like for young men, maybe this is hormones, maybe this is culture, who knows, but for young men, it is a catalyst that you just have to hit over this very small threshold. And once you hit over this small threshold, you've unleashed some violence and that is going to be a more violent person.
We do seem to have those perfect conditions. Like, yeah. Because in America, a parent is free to use physical abuse to create a monster.
Right.
And then you set them loose in this school where there's a lot of people who...
Well, but what's interesting is those gender differences. With females, we see a different story. We see females, it's almost a gradation. Yes, I get beat none at all. I have much less violence. I get beat a little. I have a little bit of violence. I get beat a lot. I have a lot of violence. With males, it seems like I don't get beat at all. I have much less violence. I get beat any amount. I have essentially a baseline of violence now. So that's very interesting. It's an interesting dichotomy between the genders. Again, we can't tell for sure, as Dr. Nick mentioned. One, these are countries. These are big things. It's hard to quantify things like this. Number two, these are self-reported survey studies. So these aren't like they're looking at police records, you know? So some there might be differential reporting, so some kind of reporting bias based on the country's nationality or their cultures or their customs. So that's always a possibility, always something to keep in mind. But an interesting finding, and something I think should necessitate follow-up research, because that would mean you have to kind of look at boys and girls differently when you look at corporal punishment's effect.
Follow-up research with a controlled environment.
Exactly. Yeah. That's just, now we'll tell you when to beat.
If you were trying to set up a perfect society, but one where there was a professional bullying league, uh-huh. and that was our NFL, and that was which model of society do you think would you get the best bullying team, international bullying team?
What country?
Yeah, like which level? Which?
So here you want me to tell you what the study says? They grade the countries that have the most young male violence and the countries that have the least young male violence. Same thing with women too, by the way. You guys want to take a guess what country has the most young male violence in the reported survey?
I'm a proud American. I got to say, we take it right out. We have the best bullies right here in America.
Dr. Nick?
I think we're number one.
Well, the young male violence. No, it wasn't here.
Brazil?
But it's close. In some ways, you might be able to argue it kind of counts as the United States.
Texas?
Samoa.
all right, there we go.
There's big old dudes fighting all the time. That island sounds terrifying to me. They put some prions on there and I'm never going. All right, and lastly, article number four. A new study shows that 25% of all known Neanderthal remains from Poland have gone through the stomach of a raptor. Damien thinks this is true. Dr. Nick thinks this is false. And this one is science. Dr. Nick, you take the victory, even though you missed that last one.
Congratulations, Dr. Nick.
Good playing with you.
I let this happen because I'm, like I said, I'm going to be hitting you up for opioids later.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I understand. Yeah.
But by the way, this number, this 25% number, is a bit deceptive because they did find.
Thank you.
Fake news.
They did find a 115-year-old Neanderthal child's finger bone that, by the pitting on it, they can tell it actually went through the stomach of some kind of raptor. So probably an eagle of some form. It doesn't necessarily mean that the eagle or whatever killed this kid, though we do know that there were animals like the eagle that did hunt human beings in certain places like New Zealand. This isn't New Zealand. We don't know if this thing hunted and killed it, but it could have stumbled across the corpse. You know, it could have scavenged it. There could have been something else. However it happened, some bird of prey ended up eating part of this Neanderthal's body and its finger went through the stomach of it. Now, the reason this is important is because we only happen to have three other Neanderthal remains from Poland. There are three different teams.
That's why 25% seemed specific.
Yeah, that's why it was the 25%. And they are sure that all four of those Neanderthal remains are indeed Polish Neanderthals because they, right next to it, they did have a screen door on their Polish Neanderthal submarine.
Polish Neanderthal just in and of itself has a negative connotation.
You Polish Neanderthal, go get eaten by a bird.
Do you feel that they were the butt of jokes of other Neanderthals? Like-
yeah, there was, the German Neanderthals really gave them hell, too. All right. Thank you, Dr. Nick, for winning your first ever I Call BS. And thank you, audience, for coming back for 269, where you learned about how squirrel brains can give you the world's worst disease, why pythons in Florida are evolving so quickly, how banning corporal punishment in schools but not at home doesn't seem to reduce violence in young men, and how 25% of Polish Neanderthal remains have been eaten by a bird. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 270.
The pythons evolving in Florida isn't as bad as we thought, because now they mostly eat people from Florida.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.